Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, welcome. I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is the Healthy Mind Radio Show. Here, we talk about our emotional health and well-being, about living the most authentic life we possibly can, the one we truly deserve. So take notice, our true strength and action are on the march, while our fears and self-doubt are on the run. Never doubt how truly powerful you are. Let's learn together, right here on The Healthy Mind. Oh, yes. Well, welcome, everybody. Welcome. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Zafiridis, and this is The Healthy Mind Podcast for October 10th, 2012. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. You are here on a great day. I am coming off such a great high this past weekend. We had our Mind-Body Conference in New York City, the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association, the nonprofit that I'm affiliated with, partnering with New York University to do our conference, When Stress Causes Pain. I've been talking about it in the weeks before this weekend, and we had such a successful conference. We ended up having 250, I believe it was 250, people from all over the United States, and we also had three other countries represented at the conference. It was such a great conference, and I want to share some of my thoughts about that, particularly in how our emotions can create physical symptoms, what I took from this, and really the role that psychiatry really has, kind of making sure that we don't forget about our roots in therapy and what that means in the day-to-day in helping people out, our patients. So you're here on a great day. Give you the latest mind-body news. Stick around for the second half of the podcast as well. A busy week of news. You're going to want to stick around for the news. In fact, one of these pieces, some individuals are calling this the biggest breakthrough in depression research in the last 50 years, in the last half century. So you're going to want to stick around for that, and how selfishness, being selfish, can make you happy. How selfishness can make you happy. Put away the guilt. I'll tell you all about it in the second half of the podcast. But I am so happy that you are here today. The website, as always, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't hesitate to email me some wonderful emails. Thank you so much for subscribing to the monthly newsletter as well. You can do that on the homepage. I really do appreciate it, and I am just so thankful for all of you tuning into the podcast and visiting the website. Well, as I had told you, ladies and gentlemen, this past weekend was such a special weekend for us that are part of the Psychophysiologic Disorders Association, the PPDA, which takes a look at how our emotions can cause pain, physical pain, this mind-body connection. And it was such an incredible day. Experts coming from all over the country to talk about their particular area of expertise and how important, actually a couple things here. One, how important our emotions and our mind can be as it relates to our physical health, which all of us already knew that. We've talked about that here on The Healthy Mind, but really how powerful our mind is, not only to the point that it can create physical pain when we are stressed, but that we have the power, our mind has the power to heal the pain that hurts us, and not just emotional pain, but to heal the pain that is physical in nature. It was just an amazing time. And you know, I'm going to have some of the participants on to talk about that in a future podcast, but that particular conference, along with just that amazing interview with Dr. Lou Aaron. He was so gracious to join me on the podcast last week for an interview. He really, I hope, opened your eyes. I know that he really opened my eyes as we discussed kind of the contemporary face, the new, fresh face of psychoanalysis and Freud. And it really had me thinking, particularly as I was listening to the presenters in New York City. I was incredibly honored to be one of the presenters, but in listening to everyone and just the feeling that day of how incredibly powerful we are in being able to improve both our emotional and our physical health. And really the important part of this was the whole day had to do with mind-body connection, mind-body interventions. And there wasn't a single discussion, really, not one lecture that talked about medications of any type. In fact, that really wasn't any part of this conference, the role of medications. If anything, what was encouraged was to engage in these various types of mind-body techniques and treatments that might allow individuals to eliminate medications, to possibly eliminate the need for surgery and other procedures. And you know, I thought that along with Dr. Aaron, it really impressed upon me the importance, such importance of therapy. But how important it is, that conversation, that relationship between a therapist and an individual and a psychiatrist and their patient as well. And it made me think, gosh, is psychiatry kind of losing its soul? As Dr. Aaron was speaking to us last week here on the Healthy Mind podcast, I have to tell you, I was really impressed by the way that he had the humility to really own up to the fact that at least with analysis and Freudian thought, it got ahead of itself. It got ahead of itself. Why? Because it became the main theory by which to explain behavior. And with that came prestige and money and departments at universities. And it came, unfortunately, as he said, at the cost of other ways of thinking about human behavior. And it ended up costing those in the psychoanalytic community quite a bit in terms of the way they were perceived and the respect that got tarnished a bit. And I couldn't encourage you more to listen to Dr. Aaron's interview if you haven't listened to it. It is amazing. But it made me think about psychiatry as well. I wondered how many parallels of what psychoanalysis went through in terms of becoming this powerful bastion of therapy, could psychiatry really be going down that road as it has relied so heavily on a biological model and medication? Especially after going to a conference like the one I was at this past weekend in New York City. And what I say here, never doubt how truly powerful you are. We really have to remember in psychiatry that our roots are in therapy. Not that medications aren't important and not that there haven't been huge advances in the neurosciences and in medication treatment. I, as I've said many, many times here, am not anti-medications. Not at all. But the one thing we have to be careful of as a profession, psychiatry in particular, is that we don't go down that road of being dogmatic with only the biological explanation or the medications as the sole treatment of emotional illness. Much like maybe a generation before in psychoanalysis felt that was the only way of explaining human behavior. You know, I remember going to a talk, oh gosh, now it's probably been a couple years ago. I can't even remember the speaker's name, but I remembered he was out of California or somewhere on the West Coast, and he had done a lot of research on these neurochemicals. I think the one he was talking about that day was dopamine, if I remember correctly. But he had done a lot of research on dopamine and mood. And he actually said, as we were sitting there discussing, that he felt there would be some day that we would know so much about neurochemicals that he would not only be able to look at the blood work and tell how to treat you, but look at the blood work and know what kind of depression or anxiety a person had. And, you know, I felt very sad. I felt a sadness for that particular individual, for that researcher, because my instinct was to say, well, how do you explain emotions like pride or jealousy or contentment? How do you explain that in neurochemicals? What about a person's history, their successes, their failures, their triumphs, their tragedies? Does none of that matter at all? None of it? I kept my mouth quiet, but it struck me at that point, have we gone a little too far in psychiatry? And not that we don't continue to push the envelope on neurosciences, and you're going to hear me talking about that, because this type of research, particularly as it relates to biology of depression, really excites me. But the one thing we always have to keep in mind is that biology alone doesn't explain it. And I want everyone listening to keep that in mind. Biology alone does not explain all of these mood problems. I think it's important for people to keep that in mind for a couple reasons. One, there should not be a reliance solely on medications in the treatment of mood. And I'd have to say there shouldn't be a reliance on medications really in anything in medicine and the treatment of those diseases. Why? Because in the same way that you could give a person all the insulin in the world, if they keep eating cheesecakes, their sugar's still going to stay high. Our actions matter. Our behaviors matter. Our history, our relationships, what excites us, the meaning, the fulfillment in our lives, all of that matters. And all of that needs to be considered. Not only in psychiatry, but especially in psychiatry, because what we talk to with people, what we're privileged to talk with people about, our patients, are all the things that move them, the positive, the negative, all of it. And it's never as simple as just a medication. So while I had a fantastic time at this particular conference, and I got so enthused because it really excites me to know and to learn of ways that people can empower themselves, that they can step up and take charge of their lives. And not only does their emotional health improve, but their physical health as well can get better. Wow. It really made me feel great that I was part of that whole process. Never, ever doubt how truly powerful you are. You have the capacity to make incredible change in your life. All of the power, all of the strength you will ever need to face any adversity in your life that may come, it's already in you. It's already in there. It just has to be unlocked or unleashed. But it can be done. And whether it is emotional pain or physical pain, you have that power to make things so much better in your life. Don't ever doubt that. You must believe that, because that is the first step to change. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is an incredible step to take down our road to a healthy mind. And now, it's time for news. Okay, well, a very, very busy week of health news. This first story really caught my eye. The headline, "How Ketamine Defeats Chronic Depression." You know, one of the biggest struggles that we have in psychiatry today, and really all of mental health treatment, is how to treat people who have, unfortunately, not done very well in their medication treatment for their depression or their anxiety. And it is very difficult. There's a group of individuals who are known as what is called treatment-resistant depression patients or treatment-resistant anxiety. And a fascinating thing has occurred, and I'm sure that people have noticed that, particularly over the last several years from some early experiments at Yale over the last decade, that many chronically depressed and treatment-resistant patients will get immediate relief of their symptoms after taking these very small amounts of the drug ketamine. And today, there's a lot of evidence that suggests that this particular drug, it's a pediatric anesthetic, it helps by regenerating the connections between brain cells damaged by both stress and depression. And this was the analysis and the review of the literature that came from a recent piece out of the Yale School of Medicine that was published in the October issue of the journal Science. Now, the drug ketamine works on an entirely different type of neurotransmitter system than do the current antidepressants of today, whether they might be serotonin drugs or norepinephrine drugs or dopamine drugs. And these particular drugs, we know it can take weeks before people are feeling better. And unfortunately, about 1 in 3 patients will not respond to antidepressant medications. So really, understanding how ketamine works in the brain could lead to the development of a whole new class of antidepressants. And this could really open the door to a new area of research. In fact, according to Yale University's Dr. Ronald Duman, who did this review, quote, "The rapid therapeutic response of ketamine in the treatment-resistant patient is the biggest breakthrough in depression research in nearly half a century." End of quotes. Now, understanding how ketamine works is critical because it's an anesthetic. It's not the easiest thing to take. And really, for many people, it's not a practical alternative in the form that it exists today. And the improvement in symptoms that we see, which really in these studies showed severe depression improved within hours after ketamine was administered, lasts only about a week, at most maybe 10 days. And really, we have to be careful here because large doses of ketamine are abusable, and they really are the active chemical that's involved in the party drug known as Special K, and you can get psychosis with this. Now, in their research, Dr. Duman and others showed that in a series of steps, ketamine triggers the release of a neurotransmitter known as glutamate. And this is going to stimulate growth in the synapse of these nerve cells, really where two cells come together and talk to each other. And the research at Yale showed that damage in these areas caused by chronic stress is rapidly reversed by a single dose of ketamine. It's an exciting time, and really, as the research moves forward, if there are efforts made to develop drugs that replicate the effects of ketamine, hopefully we will see further promising results. Right now, it has been up and down. Some of the new results of drugs that mimic ketamine show improvement, but it takes a while. And you don't get as much of a robust response, nor does it act as quickly. But research in this area is really moving forward, and there is hope. So for those folks who struggle with treatment-resistant depression or have struggled in getting the right type of response, please know that the research is always moving forward. And in the case of this pediatric anesthetic, the answer may come someday from ketamine. Okay, well, this next story, this one really cracked me up. I really loved it because it's a beautiful way of really showing how our minds work, how we go in to making the decisions we make, to feeling the feelings that we do. The headline, "Being selfish makes us happy, especially if we have no choice." It turns out that we are our happiest when our selfishness or our self-interest is forced on us. It's imposed upon us. Why? Because it relieves us of guilt. How about that? Now, we know we're very social animals. That's what we do, no matter what you do for a living or whatever relationships you're in. Relationships matter, and we spend a ton of time building and maintaining all of our relationship. And really, kindness and selflessness is something that's always been really taught, right? When we were young, we're taught to get along with everybody and share. As we get older, we learn to take others' point of view, I guess, unless you're in Congress, and then that must have just been something you forgot how to do. But anyway, if we make a decision, though, that favors our own self-interest, or we might come across selfish, we often feel guilty because we prioritize ourselves over others. Well, when we prioritize others, sometimes we forego some of the things that would legitimately make us happy. So why does this happen? Why is it when something that we want to do for ourselves, not in a narcissistic way, let's say, but something that we know might be good for ourselves, but might come across as being self-absorbed or self-interested or selfish, we choose not to do it. We forego it. Is there any way that we can pursue our self-interest and not feel bad about it? Well, this latest research study out of the University of Pennsylvania suggests that when we're forced, when we don't have a choice other than to do something that we might think is selfish, well, it turns out we tend to be more happy. Well, in this series of studies, the researchers there thought that if you removed an individual's sense of choice, their freedom of choice, if you did that, they believed that you would remove a person's feeling of responsibility for an outcome, and because of that, it would let them enjoy self-interest without feeling selfish or feeling guilty for focusing on themselves. So what did they do? Well, they did a few studies here, but in the first study, they got about 200 undergraduates, and they had them participate in this particular lab study. When they came into the study, a person was given a bonus of $3, and some of the individuals were told, donate that $3 to a nonprofit charity, UNICEF. And others were told, keep the money for yourself. And the others were told they can do whatever they want. So, a third forced to give to a charity, a third you have to keep, but a third, it's up to you. And really, just as the researchers thought, the students who were told to keep the money for themselves reported being happier with that outcome than those who were told to either donate the money to charity or if they were left to choose whether or not to keep it. According to the University of Pennsylvania's Dr. Jonathan Berman, quote, often people really want to act in a selfish manner, but they don't do so because they know they would feel selfish if they did, end of quotes. Now, this raises the question, though, were the students really happier because they didn't have to choose between themselves or others, or is it possible that they could have been happier because there was no choice at all? A good question. So to figure this out, the researchers did another experiment. This time, all of the participants had to choose between two options. No one was going to tell you what to do. So you had the choice of either receiving a $5 gift card for yourself or donating the $5 to charity. And those individuals who picked keeping the $5 gift card for themselves got to choose between a $5 gift card from Au Bon Ton or from Starbucks. And those that decided they were going to give it to charity had to choose between a donation to the Red Cross or a donation to UNICEF. And this was interesting. The individuals who could choose only between the options that would benefit themselves, one of the two restaurants, reported feeling the happiest. It showed that the conflict between self and others is what really reduces happiness, not just the presence of choice. Now, one more study. To eliminate the possibility that the individual's preferences might be influencing the results, the researchers did a third study. Now, stick with me here. All of the participants were first asked whether they would prefer to keep or donate the money. Then they were randomly assigned to one of two groups. Group one, they were told they would receive their preference, while the second group was told that a computer would choose for them. In reality, everyone was going to get their preference, okay? But this manipulation basically ensured the only difference between the groups was whether a person believed they were responsible for their outcome or not. And what did they find? Of those individuals that preferred to keep the bonus money, the individuals who felt that the computer had made the choice for them actually felt better than those who believed they had made the choice, even though every one of the participants originally said that they wanted to keep the money. How about that? Even though you say that you want to do something within your own self-interest, you are going to be relieved that you don't have to make that choice. Altogether, these three studies show that people are happier when, in choosing something for ourselves, we prefer that it is imposed upon us because it frees us from having to take responsibility for the outcome. We get a pass on the guilt. So, having the freedom to choose between various options is important, but it doesn't necessarily make us any happier. And as many of you here on The Healthy Mind know, I am a huge fan of the band Devo. And this study reminded me of one of their song lyrics, specifically, "Freedom of choice is what you've got. Freedom from choice is what you want." Now, with the time that we have left, I just want to blast through the remainder of the news headlines in a segment that I like to call the Healthy Mind Headlines. Okay, the first headline. Rare genetic disorder points to molecules that may play a role in schizophrenia. Scientists studying a rare genetic disorder have identified a molecular pathway that may play a role in schizophrenia. This, according to new research in the Journal of Neuroscience. The next headline. Whether we like someone affects how our brain processes movement. Whether you like someone can affect how your brain processes their physical movement. This, according to the latest research from the Brain and Creativity Institute at the University of Southern California. And finally, the headline, 7 a day for happiness and mental health. Happiness and mental health are highest among people who eat 7 portions of fruits and vegetables a day, according to the latest research findings. Oh, I guess our moms were right. Eat your fruits and veggies, eat your fruits and veggies, eat your fruits and veggies. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we've done it again, you and I. We have made it to the end of yet another broadcast of The Healthy Mind. Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to listen to the program. I really do appreciate it. As always, the website, www.thehealthymind.com. Please don't forget to sign up for the free monthly newsletter and email alerts at the homepage. You can always follow me on Twitter. That's at Dr. Zafiridis. And any questions, comments, anything, I want to hear from you. You can reach me by email anytime. The email address, peter@thehealthymind.com. That's peter@thehealthymind.com. And for the Healthy Mind Podcast, part of the Healthy Mind Network, I'm Dr. Peter Zafiridis. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll see you next time right here on the Healthy Mind.